Blow the horn, let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
None of them you guys are playing against. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hello and welcome to the Alabama Football Podcast, the only podcast giving away tickets to this year's BCS Championship game. On Saturday, of course, we learned that Alabama will not be a participant, but hey, the secondary market should still be active. Tom, we're a little late getting to record this, and while that may take the edge off the loss a little bit, it's still aggravating. Offense, defense, special teams, where you want to start?
You know, I mean, I guess I just got to start with LSU made the big plays and, you know, the breaks went their way. You know, they ran 65 offensive plays in the game for 433 yards. Four of those plays accounted for 203 yards. And I think that's just the story of the game. I mean, we are too inconsistent as a football team. You know, in our intro, we talk about, you know, or Coach Saban's voice is, win every day. Do the little things. And he talks about how every day you're either going to get better or you're going to get worse. And I don't know if it's a lack of maturity on this team. I don't know if it's a lack of leadership on this team. But we are not doing the little things. And so, you know, one example of this real quick is Josh Chapman on one play decides to beat three players and sack Jarrett Lee for a 12-yard loss. Where that's been all year, I don't know. But it's second and 22 now at their 15-yard line. The very next play, we decide not to cover their slot receiver. We decide to keep him completely open. Jarrett Lee just throws him the ball. He gets a 16-yard completion. And suddenly, they're not backed up at their 15 anymore. They're all the way back to the 30-yard line. So you have a great play, and then you come back, and you're just, you know, it's just hot and cold.
Yeah, yeah, we were definitely inconsistent. And if you look at the two busted coverages, you're talking about the secondary, two of the busted coverages accounted for 60% of their passing offense. I mean, that's insane that they're gonna collect that many yards. And I think, and I hate to say that we're reading our press or you know, we just go out to expect to win because, you know, I hope that I trust that that's not the case. But, you know, I saw a stat before the game that the highest ranked secondary or the highest ranked pass defense that LSU had faced all season before Saturday was the 81st ranked pass defense in the country. And we were ranked, I don't know, 31, 32. A tremendous, you know, in terms of rankings, we were ranked tremendously higher than the best pass defense that that they've seen. And then for them to score or for them to rack up more offensive yardage in the second half than they have been averaging per game all season is just insane. We talked last week in the offseason or the bye week report about the secondary being the strength of the team, you know, leading the country in interceptions. In my mind, it was a foregone conclusion. Over/under for me was two. We're gonna get two picks. We didn't get any, and we allowed them to have their most prolific passing day of the year. I don't know where to even start to look at it. We can talk pressure. We can talk missed assignments. Again, two. You know, we're playing a zone, and on two occasions, we have a player, and it's a different player, but we have a corner. You know, fail to fall back and protect his zone, and that leads to big plays.
No, it does, and we can talk about this in more detail when we get to the defensive commentary, but, you know, LSU also came into this game pulling out all the stops. You know, I heard an analogy where LSU felt like they had to do everything they could to win this game. They had to have a couple extra possessions. Every break had to go their way. So typical Les Miles, he's going for it on fourth and one. He's doing the fake punt. He tried a running back pass early in the game that we were able to snuff out. But here they are pulling out all the stops. And I guess the other thing that's frustrating, you know, despite us not being able to do the little things and be disciplined, is they just wanted it more. They were the hungry team. And I'm, my gosh, I didn't realize how much I was going to miss a Mike Johnson and a Rolando McClain as the leaders of this team, because nobody seems pissed when things aren't going their way. They're just kind of like, oh, shit, it'll just get better.
We seemed very lethargic, and we had no sense of urgency. And you're spot on. LSU on both sides of the ball, they acted with urgency, and we did not. It just seemed like, you know, on offense, we have a long field. We don't get the first down. We'll punt it away. We'll get them next time. It's okay. And that just seemed to exude from the screen. We were watching this on TV. That just seemed to exude from the screen. I will get them next time because they're not going to score. We just didn't have that sense of urgency. And LSU did, and it came to bite us in the ass there at the end.
It very much so did. Let me kind of transition to the offense first. I mean, there's so many places we can pick, but I guess we'll start with the offense. And, you know, just a couple of things that I saw that I wanted to kind of mention. First of all, we only had five first downs rushing the football. And where is these long drives where we're going to tire out the opposing defense, slow down that pass rush, take away their will? You know, we're just not seeing that. And this team, you know, this team is not able to rely on the running game like they had last year. And they're having to focus on the pass, and our offensive line's getting exposed.
Yeah, again, we just had no urgency. We weren't flipping the field, and we were not going out there to change their mind. And very lethargic, and we just didn't change the mind. What other observations did you have on offense? I have a couple, but I want to give you the runway.
Well, another one that I'd like to mention is the injury to Trent Richardson. I think that, you know, the injury to Trent Richardson in the first quarter was huge for this team, because I don't think Mark Ingram is healthy. I don't think Mark Ingram has the burst that he had last year. And Trent Richardson was having a lot of success on that first touchdown drive, because we've talked about the comparison between the two of these guys. He has the burst that Ingram doesn't have.
Yep.
I think this was the fastest, hardest hitting defense we've played all year. And Ingram is kind of, he doesn't hit the hole the way Trent does. And when Trent went out in the first quarter and we didn't see him again except one carry in the fourth quarter, I thought that was a huge factor.
That was. Trent not coming back was certainly big. A couple of things I noticed on offense, you know, and I'm not always good at recalling specific plays. So the fact that I called these out, I think are pretty interesting. Trent Richardson's touchdown, I think that was the same play that Upchurch scored the touchdown against Auburn last year, the little pass to the running back. And Julio's touchdown, I think, was the same, sort of that underneath, and he goes up and gets it. I think that's the same touchdown, the same route that he ran against South Carolina to score that touchdown. And so that tells me in a desperate end zone situation, we got a couple of tricks, and that's it.
No, that's a good point, because that was the touchdown that they did against South Carolina. And, you know, I think this, you know, on offense, I think this team, when they did have, you know, they did rely too much on the pass in the second half. I think I read one stat that they only rushed one time in the fourth quarter, I believe. And just like South Carolina, you know, they went too much going to all pass. And I didn't realize how much we were going to miss Mike Johnson. No offense to Chance Warmack. I think he will develop into a good player. But this is the second, in both of our losses, the pressure has come between the left guard and the center. You have not seen any pressure between Barrett Jones and William Vallejos. You have only seen it between Chance Warmack and the center. And what I find interesting about this is twofold. Number one is they're stunning at the left guard, and he's not picking it up. Second of all, they're coming right into McElroy's face, and the guy just can't see it coming.
Well, and I made note of that because there was two very specific instances where that happened. And what Warmack's doing is they're coming on a delayed blitz. And what he's doing is he's lending a hand. And one time he was helping Vallejos double team, and the second time he was double teaming with Carpenter. And both times it was maybe even the same linebacker came on a delayed blitz. And so he's engaged with Vallejos or turned the other way with Carpenter, and a guy just runs right by him.
No, that's true.
The second time with Carpenter, he delayed reaction, but it was too late for him to make the play. And so that's where you do miss a senior veteran guard in
started
that position
3 years.
That says,
yeah.
Hey, buddy, I'm going to help you block that guy, but I still got to man my hole. And so if I fall off the block, it's because I'm manning my hole. And he just wasn't doing it. He just went full on engaged with the double team, left a wide road wide open, and McElroy took it in the chops.
No, he did. And that was the area where we are getting exposed on the offensive line. Okay, it's not on the outside; it's in the inside. And even on the fumble with McElroy and Drake Nevis. I mean, in that example, he overcompensated and didn't help Vallejos. Vallejos was beat very quickly on that play. Drake Nevis is like leaping towards you. I'm sorry, McElroy. I know you're focusing on your reads, and I know you're looking at how plays are developing. But the boy does not look – he just looks up and he doesn't look down. I hate to be critical, but if a 300-pound guy is falling at your feet – I mean, I went back and watched the replay 4 or 5 times to see this. His head did not look down until they were right on him knocking the ball out of his hand.
Well, that's fair, and we can talk to McElroy about that. But I tell you, Vallejos better take the skates off because Nevis was running him back. I don't think I could run from a start any faster – Then Nevis was pushing Vallejos into the backfield. It was just instantaneous. And the quarterback has to think, I've got seconds that I'm available. No,
I can appreciate that. But I guess all I mean by that is that if they're coming to your blind side, that's one thing. If they are coming right up the gut, granted the offensive line has a responsibility, but if they're coming right up the gut, oh my gosh, man, I can't believe he couldn't throw that ball away on that fumble.
Well, it is a point that you made last week about McElroy moving in the pocket or moving the pocket. He doesn't take the couple steps back and throw, not off his back foot, but throw in motion. He's very set, and you know, and again, I'm not trying to pile on McElroy because I think Vallejos has a lot of responsibility there, but I think there's a lot of growth and learning that can go on there. Let me ask you about Patrick Peterson, and he's going to be a top 5 draft pick, the cornerback for LSU. He's certainly a stud player. Why do we continue, or why did we continue to pick on Peterson even after 2 and 3 of their starting DBs went out of the game? And it wasn't just to Julio. I think it was, I wrote down Hanks, it may have been Mays, but one of our, you know, quote-unquote secondary receivers, we were throwing the ball to another receiver other than Julio against Peterson when, you know, they're bringing out, you know, freshmen and redshirts to fill in secondary roles because they've got so many guys dropping.
No, that's true. And, you know, early in the game, I noticed on that first touchdown drive where McElroy called a couple audibles, which we had not seen. And 2 times in a row when he called an audible, he threw the ball to Julio. One, he threw it to his back shoulder on a fade on the left.
It was very nice.
It was a great throw. The very next time on the right, he threw that slant, okay? And suddenly they were showing a stat that when he's been covered by Peterson, 4 times he's been thrown the ball, 4 times he's caught the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So either they thought they were getting in his head or they thought that, you know, Peterson was, you know, just maybe going to be down himself and frustrated. I don't know because – I will say on the Mays play, one of the big plays that didn't go our way, McElroy threw a ball to Mays, you know, at the 10-yard line against that new cornerback. He had the guy beat by 2 or 3 yards, and he threw the ball just a little bit long. The very next play, they come back to Julio against that young cornerback and try to throw for a first down on an out pattern. Looks like the guy was all over his back, and the ball goes out of bounds. He pushes Julio out of bounds, and they don't even call anything. So, I mean, you know, they had 3 starters that went down early in this game, and they had 3 true freshmen who came in to play those roles, one being a right tackle, one being a cornerback, one being the safety.
Yep.
And I'm surprised we were not able to take advantage of that.
Right. Just in terms of some of the formations we saw, we did come out at one point in five wide. We did play some out of the Wildcat, and we showed some pistol as well. Early in the season, we talked about that. I think it was the Penn State game. We talked about how we were putting on tape multiples. It just seemed desperate. It seemed desperate to me in terms of how we were lining up. Why don't we flip the field and tell Tommy? Tell us what you saw on defense.
You know, on defense, I think the game plan should have been to bring pressure all day on these two quarterbacks. Like you were talking about in the beginning about some of these numbers, LSU quarterbacks had only completed one pass over 20 yards in the last 10 quarters. Jordan Jefferson had not thrown a touchdown pass since the first game of the year. These two guys have shown on numerous occasions. I think Jefferson, to your point, I think he came into the game with two touchdown passes and eight interceptions year to date. And so when we did get pressure on these guys, they looked horrible. And so it's like, why didn't we bring pressure pretty much early and often? Mm-hmm. And especially when the right tackle went down halfway through the first quarter, I think we should have been going after that right tackle on numerous occasions.
Yeah, I agree. We definitely should have. We talked about the two blown coverages on one of the plays, Mark Barron. And Mark Barron was made to look bad because Dre was so far out of the picture, it looked like maybe it was Mark Barron who had missed the coverage. And we talked about Mark's a strong safety, not so much a free safety. So when he's back there on the island by himself and lone back coverage, single setback, that he's not able to catch the guy. And Dre was so far out of the picture, that went for a touchdown. It makes me wonder a little bit, gosh, if we don't miss a Robbie Green, because maybe he would have at least chased him down. And that's not a knock on Mark, because
he's more of a strong safety
Dre.
Type. No,
yeah, and
no.
It was Dre who missed the coverage. I mean, just be realistic. If Dre have stayed in coverage, then it doesn't matter if I'm playing safety. But, given what we had the one fall down, and then we had probably the wrong person as the backup.
Well, and we noticed this. We noticed this in the game.
It
was the Tennessee game.
Yep, and we sent Phelan and left Mark back.
Yeah, I mean, I had in my notes to talk about today, when we decide to play zone, which I think we play too much of, why is Lester not the guy in center field instead of Barron? No offense to Barron, but I think Lester would have had a better chance of catching him than Mark would have. And also, right after that play, I mean, you can see clearly from Saban that, Dre was the one and Gary Danielson kind of jumped all over it. You can tell that Dre was the one that blew that assignment, because Dre was over there there was no wideout on Dre's side at all. And so Dre was supposed to cover that space, and Dre did not. But I guess this brings up another point, is that we were leading the country in interceptions. You and I have talked about, it's pretty obvious that the strength of this team right now is the secondary. It's not the front seven.
Right.
And so last year, yes, we had Javi, we had Kareem, we had Marquise Johnson. We were lucky to have three cornerbacks who could just lock down their guys, and we could bring the pressure, because we couldn't get pressure from the front four. Well, I do not understand why this team does not trust these cornerbacks to play man easier than a complicated zone. If I'm a Dre and I'm a Milner, those guys know how to just play man, because obviously the zone schemes that we're playing, they don't get that.
Yeah, and against Arkansas, we got burnt with a zone. Milliner did. We saw two times this game. We saw the Tennessee game. I could see where with a young secondary, we want to play a zone, because there's coverage and there's the two safeties deep. We trust them. We start to trust them a little bit. Still maintain a zone, but blitz a safety so there's not two deep. There's one deep. Maybe we're not ready to make the step to man, but I don't know what we have to lose, because we have talent, and we talk about Javi, Kareem, and Marquise, and I'm not saying we're there yet, but when we start looking at who we do have on the roster, Dre, Milliner, you know, Menzi didn't play a whole lot. Phelan beat, I don't want to say beat him out, but played in his place. You know, Menzi's still coming off that injury, and
right.
And maybe he just needs to step it back a little bit. But, you know, we have talent at the positions. You know, maybe we do need to cut him loose and just let him play man and see what we got.
What's the worst that's going to happen? I mean, I was looking at the stats. LSU quarterbacks were 14 of 20 for 208 yards. On those three big plays against the zone, they completed 3 of 3 for 141 yards. So to your point, without those three big plays, they only complete 70 yards passing on the whole game.
Yep.
That's just crazy. One other thing that I have to touch on, we talked about this in the bye week, and we talked about, you know, Jarrell Harris, and we talked about, is Jarrell Harris going to make a move on Chavis Williams during the 2 weeks of preparation? Man, Chavis Williams is not the answer. I'm sorry. He looks lost. He looks timid. He looks out of position. And there were, and I just have to touch on this because this is such a huge thing for me. There was two different key plays where he was not able to keep containment, which I thought were huge, you know, from a momentum standpoint. Mm-hmm. First of all, in the first half, LSU had only accounted for 40 yards of offense up until 2 minutes left in the half. They had done nothing, even though they had had the ball on our side of the field two or three times. They've got a 3rd and 5 at their 8-yard line. And they decide to do the option. Jordan Jefferson is being flanked by Darius and Dante Hightower. All Chavis Williams has to do is cover the running back. Instead, he decides to go with the other two on the quarterback.
Yep.
The running back takes the pitch. They get a first down.
Yep.
Suddenly, they're at the 20-yard line. They let Jordan Jefferson open it up a couple times. Next thing you know, they get 50 yards of offense. And the reason I want to point that out is they got as much offense of yards on that last minute of the half as they had the whole half to begin with. I think it gives them momentum going into the halftime, and it gives them something they can build off of.
We had that play stone cold locked. We had the quarterback, and we just left the pitch man wide open. We had a gaggle of defenders on the quarterback, but we just let the pitch man go wide. And you're right, Chavis, if he were Johnny on the spot and he was right there on the pitch man, there's no gain, and you know, certainly they don't drive the field and build confidence, and you know, maybe we get the ball and maybe we're able to do something. It's a little bit, you know, it's assignment. You have to maintain your assignment.
It goes back to doing the little things, and you know, just to call them out, of the four big plays, okay, of the four big plays that accounted for 200 yards of their offense, okay, Dre Kilpatrick, you screwed up one of them. D. Milner, you screwed up one of them. Chavis Williams,
yep.
You screwed up one I hadn't even talked about, and that's the revert. That's the handoff to Russell Shepherd for 43 yards.
Hmm.
That big play in the third quarter was on his side, and he did not keep containment again. Okay,
yep.
But then on the fourth big play, which we need to talk about real quick, on the 4th and 1, it was Courtney Upshaw.
Yep.
Unfortunately, Courtney Upshaw makes a beeline and almost catches the running back on the other side of the field. Doesn't even think about containment, what I'm supposed to do. Oh my gosh, we're playing Les Miles. The boy went for it on 4th down 5 times in 2007. Don't you think at the 25-yard line on 4th and 1,
we should
tell the players that just be on the lookout for something? I just don't understand it. It's frustrating.
Yeah, but I want to give a little bit of credit to the LSU team. In a situation, they didn't blink. They didn't flinch. They knew that they had a play.
They executed.
Dialed up, ready to go. And it was a play that I haven't watched all the LSU's games, but I venture to say they haven't run that play all year. And they had that play dialed up for that situation. And hats off, because I don't get the same feeling that we had a play dialed up in a situation.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because one of the things I was thinking about to talk about today is – I didn't feel like there was only one wrinkle that I saw that we had prepared for LSU. So we had 2 weeks to prepare for them, and the only wrinkle I saw was some herky-jerky spread thing at the goal line on our first touchdown drive.
What the hell was that?
Where we do this stupid thing where we spread out.
Look like a high school team.
And then we come inside. And that's the only new wrinkle that I saw that we had in 2 weeks worth of game plan.
Wow. Yeah, I forgot to even talk about that because that was the stupidest thing that I saw. That was pretty silly.
What did you think about special teams?
Well, I have to ask. I guess we're picking on guys, and I kind of hate to do that, but what do kickers do during practice?
Are you talking about the punters, or are you talking about the guys who kick off?
Well,
one we'll start
where
with.
Where do we want to start? You know, the answer to the question is kickers kick during practice, and so they should get, you know, pretty good at quote-unquote the easy stuff. And so how do you kick it out of bounds?
And how do you kick it out of bounds ever? But how do you kick it out of bounds so horribly?
So blatantly. Right? He hooked it. It was like a golf swing where you're like, oh, you know, that's a bad one, even before the follow-through is done. I mean, it was a hellacious hook.
You know what that is, to be fair? And we gave them praise in last week's podcast. Okay, we gave praise to the walk-on punter and to the scholarship kicker. But you know what they are? They're freshmen. And in the moment, Cade Foster came out there amped up on his first kickoff. He's amped up after we score a touchdown, and he did what a freshman does.
Yep.
Just like Mandel on his first punt early in the game kicks a 28-yarder, and they start off at our 43-yard line at the beginning of the game. Let me ask you about something else, and this is a stat that I wouldn't have known if it wouldn't have been for Vern Lundquist and Gary Danielson, but on the fake punt, after they had executed the punt, they add a little extra nugget here that I'm sure you caught, and they said coming into the game, the LSU punter had run for a first down on two other occasions already this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's back to what we said a minute ago about Les Miles, the Mad Hatter. It's 4th and 1. You are at midfield. You are coming into this game thinking, I got to pull out all the stops to have any chance to pull an upset. And so suddenly, what do? We line up every guy on the line of scrimmage. The only guy who bothers to even watch the ball is John Fulton, who's the outside guy.
Yep.
Everybody else makes a beeline, you know, slanting inside. Oh my gosh, it was the easiest 4th down conversion they could have tried.
Well, it was, and we have everyone on the line. It was the second punt where we had done that, and they're in a spread sort of blocking formation, and all of their blockers cut in. They all block to
so
the
what
inside.
What about our guys do?
Our guys just follow the blockers. I guess I better go here to get blocked because I can't go straight or go around where I might have a clear shot or just maintain to prevent, you know, the guy running. When they went for that, you know, it was the 4th and 1, and they were just on, you know, on their side of the 50. I just blurted out loud at the TV, surely they wouldn't go for it here, because just where they were on the field, and the Mad Hatter, I mean, he says, I'm going
to
go for it anywhere. And so talking about pulling out all the
just
stops.
To his credit, he had nothing to lose.
Absolutely. I thought, you know, special teams, we talked about Cody Mandel a little bit. His first punt, I'll give you that. That wasn't good. The rest of the day, I thought he punted pretty good. He had some good distance, and I thought with each of his punts, I thought, man, this is the one that's going to flip the field, and it never really materialized that way. They would drive out just far enough to punt the ball and back us back up. I thought he played pretty well once he got past that first one.
No, I agree, and it's those jitters, right, of that freshman, and that he's a walk-on by, you know, it's going to even add to it. And, you know, it goes back to what we said at the beginning of the podcast. This team is just too inconsistent. They don't do the little things consistently enough, and against lesser opponents, you can overcome that. But against your bigger opponents, you're not going to be able to. Because, you know, I would have loved to spend this time talking about, you know, Patrick Peterson. Patrick Peterson came into this game being all-world punt return and kickoff return. Guess what? We shut him down on the return game.
Yep.
But it was a mixed bag.
Yep.
Because these other things were so horrible.
Hey, this wasn't special teams, but Scott Cochran, man, he's got some lungs on him. At one point, you could hear, now this is how many people do they sit there? 92,000, 98,000. It's a big stadium, and it's known for being loud. So I get that there's mics on the sideline and all of that, but I never have I heard a single coach yelling over the din of the crowd, and it was Scott Cochran. And I pointed that out. My wife was watching, and I was like, do you hear that? And you could hear it just echo on and on and on and on. I thought that was pretty impressed by that.
No, that's true.
And that may have been the most impressive performance of the day.
Oh my gosh!
What is your takeaway from the experience in Baton Rouge?
My takeaway is we don't have enough leaders on this team. You know, we talked at the beginning of the season about this team hasn't accomplished anything. This team has a mountain to climb. You know, I think Coach Saban said it best. You know, after the game when he was talking about, this year's team has spent all of their time comparing themselves to last year's team and what last year's team did. And they started off a number one ranking because that's how they ended the season. Well, this team had not done anything to deserve that number one ranking. And unfortunately, you just see the youth, you see the lack of experience, and you know, hopefully this will get better in years to come.
My takeaway for this game is crazy genius, you are Les Miles. It's hard to believe, and we've kind of hinted around this, but I think we just have to hit it straight on and say that that Les Miles, you know, I think he outcoached our team. I think he outcoached Saban. They had special plays lined up for special situations.
Ready to go in a notice.
Ready to go in a minute's notice. They didn't flinch. I kind of had a laugh at the expense of Les Miles at halftime, because you know you have to love the stylings of Les, but you know they were down at half, and he said we're right where we want to be, and I thought, well, I hope you're there at the end of the game, but you know apparently he's on to something, because they came out in the second half and you know they really put it on us and stepped away with a victory. I also saw at one point the TV footage caught it. I'm sure that you saw this too. Les Miles, the Mad Hatter, the crazy genius, bends down, rips grass out of the turf, and puts it in his mouth. The crazy mad genius is eating grass from the stadium. Did you see that? I thought that was crazy.
I did see that. I didn't know what to think about that.
I don't know what to think about that either, but I have to put it out there. All right, mini game balls. Who gets yours?
You know, as it was with South Carolina, it's kind of hard to find one, because I think it has to be somebody who does the little things and is consistent. And our theme of how I feel like this game went, you know, mine has to go to John Fulton. And, you know, we haven't compared notes. So I'll be kind of curious who yours is. But he's the one guy that stood out to me as a difference maker that did what he was supposed to do at the gunner position. He limited the returns. He downed two balls inside the 20, and he was the one guy who was paying attention on the fourth and one.
Well, you know, normally we do at least compare notes of who we're going to mention so we don't overlap, and you refused to do that this time. So I have written down that John Fulton is my mini game
player. Oh, really?
As well.
Okay.
We talked about shutting down Patrick Peterson. Well, John Fulton shut down Patrick Peterson in the return game. There was a couple instances where he was just right there to force the fair catch. And there was another time, and this just speaks to the fact he was, you know, so involved in down and getting the ball and downing the ball and passionate about what he's trying to do, that he was tight roping the line to make sure that he downed the ball. He downed the ball and he looked up, and you could just see he just shook his hand, because it was the six. He downed it on the six.
Yep.
So the line that he saw was the 5-yard line.
But you love that.
Because they don't paint their end zone, and so it's just grass. And so it was, you know, he thought he was at the one, and he was on the six. But hey, I'll take the six, because it's a freshman down there hustling, true freshman down there hustling.
The
and he just, you know, sort of reacted. He's like, I could have backed him up 4 more yards myself.
I didn't get it quite like I wanted to. But perfection, though. I mean, I like that he was being a perfectionist.
I agree. And so, I hats off to John Fulton. So he gets the double game ball. After a loss, I didn't know if you'd be mad and just not award one. So I thought I was safe, but I guess not. All right, next week we have Mississippi State. Both teams are 7-2, which is interesting, because I think from an expectation standpoint, Mississippi State is ecstatic to be 7-2, and Alabama were a little bit disappointed to be 7-2. And I think that makes this a very dangerous game for the Tide.
You know, I'm not sure how this team's going to respond. Because we saw a couple years ago after the SEC championship game when they lost to Florida, they came out disinterested against Utah and had it handed to them. And that team had more maturity than this team does.
Yep.
And so my concern is with the lack of leaders on this team and the youth and inexperience and you know, guys, you know, I'm just going to mention a Dre Kirkpatrick type of player. They've been successful their whole lives. They come to Alabama, and then last year they win a national championship. And so it's like this is the first adversity some of these guys have ever faced. And so they're going to come out and play against a team that's ready to strap it on, and you're right. I mean, I think this is a very scary game for them.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very physical game. I think it's potentially going to be a low-scoring game. You know, I might see a 17-7 type ball game. I think the good guys do pull it out, but I think it's close late.
Well, you know, obviously my prediction last week wasn't worth a darn because, you know, I had given us way too much credit in how we were going to rebound or build on what we did against Tennessee. I would agree with you that I think it's going to be a low-scoring game because of Mississippi State's defense. They've always played us tough. I would hope that we can put more than 17 points on the board, but I still think the margin of the victory is going to be something like a 20-10 game.
All right, well, we'll tune in next week to see how the Tide handles the Dogs. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and roll Tide!
Thank you for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast, the only Alabama podcast giving away BCS championship tickets. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
Aye.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
Aye.
Email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
Aye.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Aye.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our...